Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth.
This is The Advertising Show. It's being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. And by Captivate Network. You can visit them at captivate.com. The Advertising Show, a Big Radio Midgets production. We have out of Woodstock, New York, Crosby, Stills, and Nash. No, that's not right. Mark DeSwant, Aaron's a consultant, executive coach, speaker on the topic of global branding. 15 years of marketing experience at Unilever in Europe and in the United States. And I'll tell you more about Mark here in just a minute, but Mark will join us for a few segments. What else do we have? Well, let me take a look here. We've got momentarily here Shamin Abbas, our activist for excellence. Be relentless without being pushy. So that's, okay. So stick to it. Don't get pushy or anything like that. Turn into a used car salesman or something like that. So we'll see what she has to say about that. A little bit later, it's Jean Bliss, the customer experience, and Visa. Pavlov would be proud. So we'll find out what that's talking about as well, too. And obviously, a great interview with Mark and Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth here at theadvertisingshow.com. Yeah, the Olympics in full swing, of course. The big thing on, especially on NBC, Brad, and still a very unusual thing they call the bird's nest. They've got the bird's nest and the water cube. It's kind of cool over there, too. But basically what they're suggesting, this is out of the Wall Street Journal. It says China may be a land of crowds, but not at the Olympic Green, which is where the sponsors are. Some major Olympic sponsors have literally invested millions to pitch their brands from the elaborately constructed pavilions, and they're kind of upset. Well, it says they're fuming because access to the green, usually the main focal and gathering point of most games, has been strictly limited. What they're saying, security concerns, I can understand that, I guess, but Beijing Olympic officials have turned away droves of spectators who are curious to see the green with day passes. For the most part, the only people who've been allowed inside are those with hard-to-get tickets to the venues along the green. They're suggesting 40,000 sponsors, not sponsors, but 40,000 visitors a day. And they were expecting like 200,000 a day. So they're a little bit upset, basically, because it's justifying a cost of $150 million to put that whole thing on. So it's a nice atmosphere. Obviously, it's one of the parts of Beijing that is not crowded this time of the year, unfortunately. What do you have there?
Well, and, you know, just continuing on that for a moment, I think it's just, you know, honorable that you watch the Olympics, especially a lot of that swimming stuff in your Speedo. I know your wife sent me an email the other day, attached with a picture, I might add, that was really becoming.
So you like it. You like it, huh?
It was nice. I especially like the Olympic rings when I saw you bend over and pick up that bag of popcorn, which I thought was very I didn't know the rings were that big, frankly. But right. Anyway, what?
Nothing.
By the way, you mentioned our guest today's in Woodstock, New York. I might add that Effective Brands, the company that Mark is associated with as founder and chairman, have offices not only in New York, but London, Amsterdam, as well as Singapore. And with our worldwide audience, a large portion of our audience originating out of Asia as well as Europe, as you well know, Ray.
Right.
Like to pass that along, that it's a global conversation that we're going to be having today. I saw this real quickly, Ray. I know we got a break for Shamin coming up, but 2,200 hours of Olympic coverage online NBC this year, I thought was a really statement about the interconnected internet-based world we live in. Of course, they're smart enough to realize that they're not making the events scheduled to be televised available online until after they've been seen on TV. Concerned, obviously, a bit about how the web might draw viewers away from traditional TV coverage. NBCOlympics.com, if you haven't heard that by now, of course, is the only website where video coverage of the events will be available. While other sites can show Olympic trials as they've led up to the Olympics, they are required to link to NBCOlympics.com, and the video content must be approved before the games begin. NBC, by the way, Ray, paid $3.5 billion, mm-hmm. that's with a B, billion dollars, to the International Olympics Committee for the exclusive rights of this year's games.
Wow.
And there are 1,400 hours of TV coverage scheduled that we're going through right now, which is more than all TV coverage of past summer Olympics combined. So
wow.
Great coverage both through traditional channels as well as, more importantly, through the online channel.
Really? Wow. The Olympics, an exciting event, ladies and gentlemen. Shamin Abbas, our activist for excellence, is asking us to be relentless. Let's find out what that's all about.
And now, it's time for Activist for Excellence, PR, publicity, and crisis management instruction for today's marketing professional. Now, here's your host, the uncompromising Shamin Abbas.
How to be relentless without being pushy. What is the one quality the media can agree upon when it comes to publicists? Pushy comes to mind. There is a fine balance between being relentless on your client's behalf and coming over as pushy, and it requires some intuition and the ability to read other people's expression or tone of voice to gauge whether or not you've crossed over into annoying territory. There is absolutely nothing wrong with politely asking a member of the media after you've pitched them on something you thought this person would jump on for sure, whether or not you're pitching the wrong person or taking the wrong approach. You'd be surprised how often a writer or reporter will tell you honestly and why. The trick is to ask nicely, humbly, and with the intention of making that reporter's job easier. There is absolutely nothing wrong with politely asking a member of the media after you've pitched them on something you thought for sure this person would jump upon, whether you're pitching the wrong person or taking the wrong approach. You'd be surprised how often a writer or a reporter will honestly tell you why. The trick is to ask nicely, humbly, and with the intention of making that reporter's job easier. They aren't often approached this way, and it can be disarming and really break the ice. They may not cover the story, but you can be sure they're likely to open the next email from someone who took the time to ask. Another way to establish a relationship with members of the media is to approach them without a specific agenda. We've found the promise of a quick desk side accompanied by a Starbucks product does wonders for cordial relations. Sometimes you have to abandon the agenda and connect on a person-to-person level. You can bet your next email will not be ignored. When you're pitching a story, send the first attempt and send a follow-up a few days later. If that still doesn't garner a response, pick up the phone. These days, you're quite likely to get a voicemail, and you can leave a message along the lines of, "I just wanted to be sure you received the release I sent and to find out if there's any interest." That sounds breezy and innocuous and not accusatory. What a publicist should never do is to send out a pitch once to one reporter at each publication and then hope for the best. If your first round didn't get any bites, go back to your media database or publication masthead and pick out another person. You owe that to your client.
You've been listening to Activist for Excellence, PR, publicity, and crisis management instruction for today's marketing professional with host Shamin Abbas. Shamin is president and founder of Shamin Abbas Public Relations, a full-service agency providing local, regional, national, and international media relations, special event production, and inventive promotion, with offices in New York City and West Palm Beach. To learn more, visit ShaminAbbasPR.com. That's ShaminAbbasPR.com.
Thanks, Shamin, here on the Advertising Show. Just about to bring on Mark DeSwan Ahrens out of Woodstock, New York this weekend. He is a managing partner and co-founder of Effective Brands, a global branding marketing consultancy. Effective Brands focuses exclusively on serving the unique opportunities and the challenges faced by global brand marketers. We're going to learn a lot more about what Mark does and all about Mark, too, who, by the way, is a brand new father. That's pretty cool to see here at the Advertising Show. It's Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Stay right here.
Here comes another typical commercial. I could get your attention by blowing a foghorn. Or maybe an awesome scream. But even that doesn't cut through the clutter enough to really captivate your attention. If you're an advertiser and you really want your message to be heard, then reach for the golden nugget of advertising. It's what's called a captive audience. One company delivers this much sought-after captive audience. And believe it or not, it's just the people you want to reach, business professionals and decision makers. It all happens in 23 of North America's largest and most progressive markets. And the captive audience is right there in the elevators of select premier office towers. Over 8,000 high-quality video screens get people's attention with what research proves they want, news and information. It's all combined with your branded message in a way that only this captive audience sees and absorbs. Cut the waste in your advertising budget by reaching just who you want to reach. Don't just advertise. Captivate your audience. To find out more, click on Captivate.com.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth.
We are the men of Texaco. We wear the Texaco star.
This is The Advertising Show. Ray Schillens, Brad Forsyth, and out of Woodstock, New York this weekend, Mark DeSwan Ahrens, founder and chairman of Effective Brands. Mark, welcome to The Advertising Show. Great to have you here.
Thank you.
Yeah, Mark, we call this the shameless plug portion of the show. We always allow our guest, not always, but we often, someone of your stature and your background, would like to share with our audience a little background on your company. Effective Brands, founded in 2001. I'm curious, did you ever envision the amount of global success that your company has acquired in the past 7 years? Was this always a part of your plan?
Well, obviously, when you start something like this, you don't do it without projecting a little bit forward, but at the same time you realize that it's partly dream, partly projection. We started the company because we ourselves, and I'm one of the co-founders, by the way, we ourselves were in global roles, and what we realized was that actually a lot of marketers, because of the globalization on the consumer side and in corporate side, a lot of marketeers were being thrust into global marketing roles, but actually when I turned into that role, I realized that there wasn't a book to read. In fact, we're writing it, called The Global Brand CEO. There wasn't a council to join to learn how to play this role well, and there wasn't a consultancy to actually help me be good in this role. And so after a little bit of discussions and some realization that this is definitely where things are going, we decided to create the company, and that was the foundation of Effective Brands in 2001.
And I think it's certainly unusual, and you just pointed it out yourself, that some people like yourself and your co-founders and associates would transition from the client side and bring that experience to a consultancy that now engages, I guess, with the same people that you and your associates once were. How is that different than, I'm sure you had consultants working with you when you were on the client side of the desk, so to speak. How does you and your firm approach business differently than how you experienced it as a brand manager?
Well, you know, the huge difference, and I have to go through this story quite a lot because we're growing so much, we're obviously recruiting quite a lot as well. And so it's very often the conversation, because most of our directors are straight from the client side. And we've decided that although consulting, of course, is a hugely important background, actually we add most value when we can look our clients, usually a VP or a CMO, into the eyes and in their eyes and say, look, we've been here. We know what this is like. And we've decided that it is our role as the other partners of the company to very quickly teach someone, and we obviously look for the traits, but to teach someone the skill of consulting and of trusted advisorship. But what you can't teach someone is 18 years of experience, and that's the average that our directors have in terms of client-side experience. But the huge argument that I find actually gets people to switch, because it was for me too, was that at some point, you know, you're 40, 42, and several things happen. The first is that you're probably going through a phase in your life where you're beginning to think about, is this it? Is this what I want to do the rest of my life? Do I want my gravestone literally to say, I sold a lot of shampoo? That's that aspect. The other part is that you're working incredibly long hours. Typically, if you're in a global role, you're flying all over the world in a phase that actually your family life is blossoming and you're probably supposed to be somewhere else. And finally, you're working a lot of hours, but actually you're not building something that you feel is becoming bigger every time. In fact, my litmus test is, what percentage of my time am I doing things that I think are constructing new value, and what percentage of my time am I actually repeating things because other people in the company don't want to do this or don't want to yet agree that this is locked down and we now know this and we don't need to reinvent it. And what I found that after 15 years myself, that it was out of whack. I was doing 80% in the non-added value stuff and only 20% at most in the stuff where I really felt I was driving new value. And so that's the typical question I ask a director that's considering making the jump to the consulting side. Because one thing I can always say is that because you have the enormous gift of being able to work on several projects and you're always working at a very senior level, at very diverse projects, every minute you're with the client, you're adding value. You're really helping them step out of the important and not urgent and think about the very important but perhaps not urgent. And that is the special space. That's where consultants, I think, have to add value. And when you have a day where maybe you had three different meetings and all of them were in that space with different clients, like whether it was Smirnoff one moment and Cadbury's another moment, and maybe Surf, the Unilever brand, a few hours later, you know you've added a lot of value. And that's an enormously satisfying feeling.
Well, you know, I would encourage all of our listeners to check out EffectiveBrands.com. If Mark sounds like a smart guy, when you see their site, Dove, Coca-Cola, Starbucks, Unilever, Grolsch, Calvin Klein, Mars, many well-known worldwide brands that are very recognizable. Let's talk a little bit, Mark, in the time that we have left about leading brands, leading global brands learning project. You're spearheading the effort off of. Can you tell us very briefly about what that project's all about?
Yeah, well, that very, very briefly was a recognition that once we've identified the niche of global marketing, we also had to be very honest and admit to ourselves that we didn't know a hell of a lot more than anyone else. So we created the learning project. It was brilliant advice by somebody, and this started now almost 8 years ago. And we went to the leaders of big global brands. The first were acquaintances, and then slowly word of mouth started going around, where we said, listen, our hunch is that you also don't know how to do this well. You're making it up as you go along. How about you tell us what worked for you and what didn't, and we have that information anonymously. We're going to talk to other colleagues, and at some point in the next few months, we're going to come back to you and tell you what we've learned across all brands. And that snowballed from 5 to 25 to now over 125 global brands that have participated in this work. And we have not only about 1,250 directors and more senior that have been interviewed in depth, but we also have almost 14,000 global marketeers that have participated in our online quantitative survey. So we really do know now what it is that you need to be focusing on to lead a brand effectively as you go global.
Our special guest here in the advertising show, Mark DeSwan Ahrens out of Woodstock, New York, EffectiveBrands.com, co-founder and chairman of Effective Brands. We've got more time to discuss. We know you like what you hear because you're here at theadvertisingshow.com. So stay right here.
Why do more media professionals read IWantMedia.com? IWantMedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. IWantMedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says IWantMedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit IWantMedia.com.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
The Advertising Show this day, it is a very special guest with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, Mark DeSwan Ahrens, co-founder, and chairman of Effective Brands out of Woodstock, taking some time off this weekend and enjoying what I said before was the first child. This is baby number three, so congratulations on that, Mark.
That's right. Thank you very much. The first daughter, though, so it's a very special one.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's great to have you here. Thanks for being part of the Ad Show.
Keep that shotgun handy, by the way, as she goes older there, Mark. By the way, just to wrap up on Leading Global Brands Learning Project, where could our listeners find out more information about that?
Well, on our website, effectivebrands.com, we have, in the About Us session, we have a whole section that has copies and downloadable, of course, of newsletters that we give out. And the Leading Global Brands Bulletin, as it's called, is now, I think, in its 12th version. And what we do is we feature our clients and literally look at how they have progressed as they went global. The most recent one was about GlaxoSmithKline Beecham, GSK. They created a global group, at least one with teeth and real power, about 3 years ago, and they brought us in about 2 years ago to help them do an assessment of what was going well and where the real opportunities for accelerating growth were as they went global. And we helped them by first assessing with one of our tools that we call a pulse check, and very clearly identifying where to then excel, and then help them implement some of those recommendations. And very typically, our clients then have additional pulse checks. They do them once a year. And the nice thing is then you can really see the needle move quantitatively in terms of how a global group is helping each of the countries drive their success at a local market level. Because one of our mantras is there is no such thing as global marketing, or at least successful global marketing, if it isn't successful in the top five markets that drive 70% of your growth.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit, referring to an article that you wrote for Advertising Age, which is how we came to know you. And by the way, if you're interested, check out any of the CMO articles at AdAge.com, written back or submitted, I guess, back in May of this past summer. You're quoted as saying the winning leadership mindset is one that looks beyond focused on insights and communication, but focusing only on those elements won't get you far enough today in a competitive global economy. I'm curious, Mark, when did things change for today's global brand managers, and what led up to the change?
Well, I mean, obviously, I think all of us, you guys mentioned the Olympics a little bit. I think the way we experience these Olympics compared to the Olympics 4 years ago, compared to the Olympics 4 years again before that, just shows how the world is globalizing. All of these events, and in fact, as a sort of European in my background, for me, the litmus test is how Americans now look at soccer and the World Cup when that takes place, and even the European Cup. You see that consumers, and in fact, we did a big project for Calvin Klein, and one of the things you see is that consumers in the big 10 capitals around the world are more alike, if you look at youth, for example, than the people that are half an hour's drive away from them from Shanghai, Paris, or London. So there is definitely, although we will always, I'm sure, have cultural and huge cultural differences, there is at the same time big consumer groups that are becoming more harmonious, driven by global media and global brands. And, of course, that's a little bit of a chicken or an egg. That has led to companies looking at that and saying, okay, there's really a very clear choice. Either you are the local alternative, and I always think of Stony Brook or Runny Brook milk, upstate New York, glass bottles, fresh cream, not homogenized. You know, that's a very clear positioning, and every city can have one or two of those. But it's that, or it has to be you're the brand that's the most innovative, and the way and the only way that you can now afford to be the most innovative is if you're going global, because the cost of innovation is just rocketing. If you think about what Gillette spends every time they relaunch their razor blades, it's staggering. And the time that you have to then get payback on that is decreasing literally by half. It's worse than memory chips and their upgradation, because there are now so many people out there, and again, we're talking about China now, who are able to back engineer what your innovation is, and copy it, and perhaps even do it cheaper because they don't have some of the traditional manufacturing plants that you have with high labor costs. So they're able to, within 6 months, if you like, get an innovation in the market. So the days that you launched something in France and tried it out and played a little bit with it and then rolled it out into the rest of Europe and then made it to America, those are over. If you have a big innovation, you need to get it out there pretty damn quick. And that means that these organizations are all looking at how do we do things more the same without being stupid and shoving things down people's throats which they don't want.
Our special guest here in the advertising show is Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe, Mark Swan Aarons, co-founder and chairman of Effective Brands, effectivebrands.com. We've got more in a minute.
How can 18 different companies all sell the exact same thing known as water? It starts here, in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most thought-provoking, groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. Your job demands you not only have good ideas, but great ideas. And those great ideas have to start somewhere. And that somewhere is in the pages of Advertising Age, and also online at adage.com. How can you get someone's attention if you don't have $10 million in a celebrity endorsement? It starts here, in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most innovative and groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. The next big idea demands out-of-the-box thinking. Start your search for greatness in the pages of Advertising Age, and also online at adage.com.
Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
My complexion's so bad, I hate to go out.
Don't be a square. Try Ting, the faster way to clear up pimples.
Yes, doctors have...
It's Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe here on The Advertising Show with a global traveler who has settled down this weekend in Woodstock. New York, Mark DeSwan Aarons, co-founder and chairman of Effective Brands. Mark, it is such a pleasure to have you here on The Advertising Show. Welcome.
Thank you. It's mutual.
You know, the CMO strategy article I mentioned earlier in Advertising Age that you wrote, great article, has some really good examples of what, some examples that are near and dear to your heart, I know, because, Mark, you were through either your time at Unilever or now currently with Effective Brands, have been involved with many of the examples that you mentioned in the article. Let's talk a little bit. Let's give some how-to for our listeners today. Talk about some of the drivers of global brand effectiveness.
Yeah, it's good that we touched upon that, because when we did this Leading Global Brands study, after you've done 10 interviews, things start to float to the top. After you've done 25, you really know what's clicking in the most successful examples. And what we noticed was that all of these people are good marketeers. A company doesn't allow you to lead one of their global brands if you're not good at the basic block and tackling of what we call the what of marketing, the positioning, the innovation, the communication, and sometimes even the activation guidelines to countries, if you like. But what we noticed is that the most successful global brand leaders had a parallel track, and indeed that's what we call the drivers of effective global marketing. And they were about establishing very, very close connections with the key country stakeholders across the marketing organization. So that's an internal focus where these leaders made damn sure that there was a spirit of interdependence between any global marketeer sitting in some office somewhere in headquarters and the key marketeers in key countries. Because what you want to have people say about each other is that those local marketeers are fighting today's battles, and that when you ask them what the global team does, is they give me experiences and best practices from other countries that have tried this and save me, give me shortcuts and ways to do things cheaper and better quicker. But at the same time, they're working on the stuff I need next year, the important but not urgent. And that's a real spirit of interdependence. And so what you need for that is a real connection. You need people to feel that the global team understands what's going on in their market. And we actually talk about a spirit of servant leadership. Global marketeers need to set the direction. They need to be non-negotiable about that. You can't change the positioning of Tide. You can't change the color of the packaging. But at the same time, they need to have a servant quality to them, that when you ask the key marketers in countries what's going on, they say, well, they're working for me. They're helping me be successful in the U.S. or Germany or France, whatever the key countries are. That spirit of connection is important. The next thing is about inspiration. We saw that all of these brand leaders went out of their way to make sure that marketeers across whatever level of the organization, and also the people in other disciplines like R&D and sales and supply chain even, were inspired to work for this brand. GSK is a lovely one. They have a smoking cessation group. Those people think, and I think they're right, that they are saving lives. And the inspiration to work on those brands is incredible. Dove, with its real beauty, has people on the brand that won't move to other groups. And that kind of work, really inspiring around the brand, wins you this what we call the shower time or the traffic time, where people are thinking still about how to make the brand grow. So it's about connection, inspiration, and then absolute focus, which is the third driver, which gets everybody aligned on, okay, we have a lot of things to do, but which are the three most important? If you don't get those played back the same way across the organization, you know you have a problem. And then the fourth being the biggest counterintuitive learning for us, which is about roles and responsibilities. We thought the most motivated marketeers would be the ones with the biggest responsibilities, and often within globalization you see those roles being limited at local level. Actually, it's about clarity of responsibility, not the breadth of responsibility. So roles and responsibility being the fourth driver there. And the fifth and final one, which we call build, which is about continuously looking for learning where you get it right, and then immediately turning that on a dime and getting it out there, getting it to all other countries in a spirited way that doesn't feel like you're shoving something down their throat, but says, they got it right there, let's not reinvent the wheel, let's not make the same mistake, let's do it. Adapt it if you need to, but don't if you don't. And only then do you have an effective global brand.
Very good. Unfortunately, Mark, we are out of time. Congratulations on a very successful career and also a lot of insightful thinking into the world of advertising and marketing. Continued success, effectivebrands.com, and we thank you for being here today.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
With Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth, we have more of the Advertising Show coming up here in just a moment. Stay with us.
There is somewhere better to get inspired creative ideas. This is where it's at. OpenAd.net, the first online platform for advertisers, changing the way that ideas are created and traded. Access nearly 11,000 creative minds representing 125 countries around the world. Waiting online to have a go at your brief. Imagine the impact such range and diversity of talent can have on your next advertising campaign. All creative work is IP cleared before you get it. We take care of all the details while you get brilliant ideas in a fraction of the time, at a lower cost, and with a lot less fuss. No endless meetings, no away days. When a client needed a new corporate identity ASAP and on a tight budget, they got the impossible. 170 creative solutions to the client in just 24 hours, from brief to deadline. OpenAd.net, busting down the walls of the ad industry. Put it to the test. Just go to OpenAd.net and give us a try. And what have you got to lose? The future starts here.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth.
I love Bosco. It's rich in chocolatey. Chocolate-flavored Bosco is mighty good for me.
Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth here on The Advertising Show. Thanks again to a very special guest, Mark DeSwan Ahrens, co-founder and chairman of Effective Branding. He had a company earlier in his life called Ineffective Branding. Did not work as well, but we're congratulate him for that anyway. So we've got next week, by the way, we've got another, a Mark of a different name. Spells it with a K as opposed to a C. Mark Tungate, who's been on the show before, author of Branded Mail. So we'll talk to him next week as well. You know, the Olympics are big, obviously. Sir Martin Sorrell, WPP, he says that China's future is now. Well, I suppose it's now or never. He says, what we saw Friday night, obviously opening ceremonies, confirmed the perception has become reality. He said of the opening ceremony, people all over the world watching television who had been in denial about China's rapid growth now finally see it is for real. Now, here's another funny part to that. You know, obviously there's a potential for commerce and all that kind of good stuff over there. But they were saying with the graphics, part of the opening ceremonies, you know, they had the one girl who actually sang the song, but another girl who's prettier actually perform it.
Right.
They had fireworks that, because of the smog, you couldn't see, so they added them electronically.
Right.
So what we're seeing from China is Maybe not all that's real, but basically what they're saying is, China's set for the Olympic effect, they're calling the double China's market-wide growth. So we'll see what happens there, you know?
Yeah. You know, I think they electronically shrunk all those gymnasts, too. They're, 4 foot something. No, that's a big controversy. I'm sure you've heard, right?
No, I didn't, but that's interesting. I was thinking something different, but go ahead.
You can support the opening, and I got a phone call and decided that they're urging, you got to look at this. And I watched it, and I got to tell you, it was very, very impressive.
Really? Okay.
I thought so.
That's kind of cool. That's kind of cool. Yeah. Let's check in with Jean Bliss here on the Advertising Show. What she's talking about, by the way, the feature is called The Customer Experience with Jean Bliss. Visa, Pavlov would be proud is what they're talking about there. Let's find out what that's all about.
Welcome to The Customer Experience. Making customers your true priority for a profitable outcome. With your host, author, speaker, consultant, and customer crusader, Jean Bliss.
They're not using peanut butter and a bell to change our behavior as consumers, but the latest Visa commercials sure have behavior modification in mind. The messaging in the most recent Visa commercials is about as subtle as being hit over the head with a baseball bat. Use your check card or you slow down progress. The message: woe is you if you try to use a check in a retail establishment. We've got a combination of fear and good old guilt at work here, telling customers that all things productive halt when you whip out your checkbook. Is this good for consumers? Probably. In a world of convenience and efficiency management, there's some merit to moving to the card system. I'm just not sure who wins more, consumers getting zippy service at checkout or Visa, who's earning fees with every zip of that card. Zip, zip! What would Pavlov do?
This has been your weekly installment of The Customer Experience with Jean Bliss. Directing transformational customer insights for major U.S. market leaders, Jean is corporate America's change agent for a new inspirational understanding of today's consumer. To learn more about Jean's books and speaking engagements, or simply how to drive customer profitability for your company, log on to CustomerBliss.com.
Our thanks, as always, to Jean Bliss here at the Advertising Show. Our customer experience with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, inviting you to stay with us here and also join us next week as well. Hey, by the way, the Advertising Show being powered by Shipple.com. It's an incredibly powerful marketing tool called Tendency that they use. It's pretty cool. Check it out. Shipple.com is the website. What do you have there?
Well, I was going to mention CBS already in development with a new series, Streets of San Francisco, Ray. Set your TiVo. Now come the reports that the network is trying to update Hawaii 5-0. The original series, as you may recall, on CBS was from 68 to 80, Book on Donald. Meanwhile, ABC is developing a small screen version of The Witches of Eastwick based on the 87 feature. Fox's latest developments projects includes an action comedy entitled Wild Boys about three suburban dads turn guns for hire. So, as I said, set your TiVo. You know, we've joked around about RFD TV and Don Imus' cable net.
Right.
Yeah. Well, apparently they plan to bring back reruns of Hee Haw. So now there's another reason to set your TiVo, which was, of course, always country's version of Laugh At.
Made my day, that's for sure.
Well, back in CBS, they ran for 2 years in 69, but yet 20 years in syndication. So, that seems weird. I thought it ran for longer on regular broadcast television, but it ran longer on syndication.
Really?
It was a network developed program, but apparently it had more life in syndication, as they say.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It was a strange show, wasn't it?
Very much so. I can't imagine.
I think the funniest part I saw was the one guy that said, "Excuse me, I got to go brush my tooth."
It had its place in the in that particular century, okay?
Yeah.
Interesting. So RFD, very interesting. Hey, on the Olympics, on the Olympic stuff, Nadia Comaneci, Mark Spitz, they're back. They're endorsing Botox now.
Really?
Soccer player Julie Foudy is promoting Cabot cheese and Kleenex, not at the same time. And the Jackie Joyner-Kersee working with Medco, the health benefits manager. Janet Evans, John Hancock Insurance, another Josh Davis is now with Mutual Omaha. And we got Hearing aids, dental floss, and something like that.
Well, where's Joyner with the defense? I mean, you know, Mark Joyner?
No, not Mark. Jackie.
What's his name?
Jackie Joyner Kersee. That's
no, no, the guy. No, the guy that did the decathlon many, many years ago.
Oh, okay.
But he was an actor for a while, second-rate actor, and married some. You know, I thought his last name was Mark. I thought it was Mark Joyner. No,
it could be. It could be. I don't know.
Apparently not a well-known name.
Hey, come back next week. Mark Tungate will be with us here at the Advertising Show, being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. And by Captivate Network, you can visit them at captivate.com. And we hope you will go there often, all right? The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production.